Hello, and welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm Lori Townsend, your guest host for today. I'm not a doctor, I'm a journalist, but I have a lot of fondness for and understanding of the benefits of the topic of our discussion today, therapeutic healing through art and animals. Horses and dogs were my constant companions when I was a child. I loved riding and just hanging out with the horses in the pasture. Their presence was always calming and somewhat magical. And although I live in Anchorage now and no longer have horses in my life, I've maintained my nurturing relationship with dogs and love their ability to read your emotions and be there for you, quietly helping you cope. And I've seen the benefits of art therapy firsthand. Decades ago, my husband was killed in a car accident when my sons were 3 and 6. My oldest son spent time with a therapist after his dad died. Art therapy helped him through a very rough time in his young life and helped sort out questions that I didn't know needed to be asked. Professional help can get us back on track at any age. Our guest today will help us better understand how to find connection, solace, and healing through working with horses or dogs and in creative expression through art. Dr. Tammy Lubisch-White is in private practice and is also a consultant for a group called the Complex Behavioral Collaborative, or CBC. We'll learn more about that in a bit. Katie Bell is a professional counselor and art therapist, and is all three guests that we have today are in the studio, which is fantastic. And Laura Condon is a professional counselor who uses equine therapy in her work. Thank you all for being here. It's so great to have all three of you in studio.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yes.
Great to be here.
Good. Okay, for all of you, before we clarify your individual ways of working with people, let's start with kind of an overview of how you describe your therapy methods to potential patients. Dr. Tammy, you're in private practice and use different tools and methods. Give us some clarity on how you work with people and incorporate new ways of connecting people to their emotions.
Well, it's traditional psychotherapy, basically, but I add to that using the body, like somatic ways to access how we feel, and also the concept of play and humor and drama. And I guess that it would be a bit surprise to my patient to know that I incorporate those things, because we don't stop a session and say, okay, now we're using this or now we're using that. It's just something that evolves naturally from whatever comes up at the moment. It's not something that we plan. It's a big part of psychotherapy spontaneity, be able to respond to what is happening at the moment when it happens.
That is fascinating, because I would not expect that. I would expect that the therapist would have it sort of mapped out and, okay, this patient is going to need these things, and so here's how we'll approach it. But I suppose it makes sense, as you describe it, that remaining open and flexible and ready to respond to whatever the need is in that moment is much more effective than sort of figuring it out and putting something together in advance.
There is a notion that psychotherapy is, you know, we fix people, but we really cannot fix. And what we do is create a relationship and a space for healing. And that requires a completely different approach. So if you're fixing, it's like a garage. You put the person and you put the wires together and they're fixed. It just doesn't work like that. I think it's a notion that people have that that's how it works. But really, we create a space that allows an opening and awareness, which makes a difference.
Because ultimately, it's up to us, correct? People can help guide you, but in order to fully realize our own emotional state and learn how to deal with it, it depends on us.
It's truly a collaboration. I think every part, you know, it's just kind of, it's something that we do together. And that's the difference, is you're not alone with it. Mm-hmm. You have a devoted partner.
Very important point. Thank you so much. Katie, you're in private practice and you have a therapeutic art studio called Making Space. Give us some insight into how you describe your methods for therapy for people seeking help.
Yeah, I want to dovetail off what Dr. Tammy was saying in terms of a lot of people ask me, well, when do we do the art therapy part? And I say, well, it's all art therapy. Art therapy is a therapeutic, you know, a orientation. So it's our way of thinking, our way of being, and our way of doing. It's not just a directive, right? So art practices, whether it's psychodrama or visual art making or dance and movement therapy, it is all about this full integration, you know, of the experience. It is full awareness. Art therapy is also prescriptive, right? So that difference between therapeutic art making, which as Dr. Tammy described, or, you know, in that individual process, typically, you know, when we're engaging in an individual experience, we're usually looking for something that's going to make us feel good, or we're processing it on our own, versus when we're talking about, you know, therapeutic modalities, creative therapeutic modalities, they're really, you know, looking at that collaborative therapeutic relationship that is targeting specific symptoms or experiences that's helping guide and direct that healing process. So in our therapy, that might be something that we're doing through the particular materials that we're using. So maybe we're working on some sensory integration that somebody is needing to do. It's really effective in pulling someone out of dissociative states because of that really intense mindfulness experience. You're aware of what's happening in your body. You're getting this visual feedback and input. There's a sensory feedback and input from the materials you're using. And so we're using all of that for every single person in terms of what they specifically are coming to therapy for. So it's much more than, you know, creating a picture about how you feel.
Mm-hmm. Right. So fascinating. I look forward to learning more about that as we go through the hour. But Laura, I want to turn to you. You said earlier that over the last 10 years or so that you've been in private practice, you've leaned into non-traditional therapy methods. Tell us about what that means. What has that involved?
I think for me, I've always had a close connection with animals, and the fact that I could utilize this modality with people, if it's a good fit for them, if they are willing to try it, I think it's been a really powerful modality for most people. And I just think that there's something about animals and horses in particular that people can connect with. Historically, we've kind of evolved with the horse over time. I mean, originally in the hunter-gatherer days, we were hunting and eating them. And then slowly over time, something changed and they became a true partner for humans. So, and, you know, even literally taking us into war and doing some very unnatural things for the animal, and yet they still tolerate us and are very forgiving. And I think that maybe is part of the healing connection with them.
I read something recently about dogs' evolution from wolves and how they evolved to have rounder eyes so that they were more human-like almost. That was such a fascinating thing to read, that connection that humans, some humans, not all humans, I realize, but some like me have with dogs, that they have evolved to support that relationship. Really fascinating.
Yeah, and that just this morning when I was feeding my dogs, the one dog finished first and she walked to the door. First thing she did was turn around and look at me and make eye contact, and then I was focused then on her. So she has me trained very well.
Yeah, I always get a kick out of people saying, I have a dog. No, the dog has you. All right, Dr. Tammy, let's drill down a bit. Tell us more about how you work with people having mental health challenges using drama therapy to... if I'm thinking about this correctly, to sort of help them have an external dialogue with themselves. You said earlier that you use this as an integrated part of the process in an earlier interview. Tell us about how that comes together.
There are many modalities where, like, let's say I feel anxiety. So it's in me and it feels part of me, but I can externalize. I can have a dialogue with anxiety. I can ask anxiety, where did it come from? What does it serve? How does it protect us? People that tend to hide their true self because they were conditioned or because of trauma, you can actually make them hide in the room and see how they feel and where they feel safe. Instead of talking about it, we can actually do it. I mean, it's a three-dimensional kind of approach. I mean, we can do things. And one of the things that it breaks, I mean, many people think about therapy as hard work, as difficult, as consuming. And there are patches like that, but there's a lot of play and humor, and that's almost the indication of health when you can take something that was unplayable, was really hard, and you could hardly talk about it, and now you can play about it. And Woody Allen said, comedy is tragedy plus time.
Hmm.
So we moved to that direction, so things will be more easier and more playful.
It is part of it an effort for adults to connect with sort of the whimsy of childhood, to tap into creative thinking for adult problem solving? Or is it just meeting your emotions where you are at this point in time?
Hey, it's both. But it's the ability to think on the spot, to be spontaneous, to be able to not like live life as if you're taking your emotions and your behavior out of the deep freeze and then you microwave them and then you behave. You know, it's just kind of like learning to accept life, to be in life, to be alive.
And so people are actually having conversations with their emotions in this type of interaction?
That's one of million interventions.
That is fascinating to think about, making it sort of a real presence for someone to interact with, rather than, as oftentimes when we're feeling anxiety or other stress, it's such a personal, internal thing that it's hard to separate yourself from it, of course. And also, sometimes I know with myself, I wonder, well, am I just creating this? Is this real? Why is this happening? So I can see why that would be beneficial to sort of put it outside of yourself and really kind of examine it.
It's really transformational.
It sounds like it is. Thank you so much. Also, I want to stay with you just for a moment. You mentioned in an earlier interview that it's important to look at new developments and new tools in addressing mental health. Talk about what you're incorporating that is new now and why that's important.
There is a lot of changes in the way we approach things, the way we understand what mental health is, because really we don't know. That's the reality. I mean, I know it's shocking when I say we don't know, but we really do not know. And we keep searching all the time, you know, just kind of like, so many things are things that you discover as you go. Like you do something and you're just kind of like, okay, I have a feeling that we can go that direction. We go that direction. It works. Then you continue working on that way. So the developments are not necessarily named as a modality. I mean, there's new modality. There's family IFS, internal family systems that is now getting into the mainstream. But a lot of what we do comes at the moment. And then you go like, wow, you know, I just remember I had a patient that didn't talk. And in a setting and she was very upset and she didn't talk. And one day I had a DVD player and we watched the beginning of Shrek. And I asked her, are you Shrek or are you the donkey? It's when the donkey is walking after Shrek, wanting to be friends. And she said, oh, I'm a Shrek. And that was like one of her first sentences she said. And I said, okay, that makes me a donkey, right? Or she said, oh, you're very much a donkey. And we had that conversation and I asked her, I said, do you think that when Shrek is rejecting the donkey, he really doesn't want to talk with it? Does he really want the donkey to go away? And she said no. And that was a big opening for us after kind of difficult weeks of not talking. I didn't know. I just had a DVD player and Shrek was on it. And I was like, okay, let's try. So a lot of it is just being in the moment and seeing what works.
That is so fascinating. And it was like this breakthrough opening.
Completely.
Wow. All right. That's really, really interesting. Laura, you noted that you do more traditional therapy like talk therapy, but equine therapy is your favorite. Tell us why that is. I mean, I understand why, because I love horses, but what about it makes it best in your mind beyond just hanging out with cool horses?
So I get asked all the time, well, how does it work? And that's a really hard question to answer. It is one of my favorite modalities. I grew up with horses, did showing, and over time, like after college, my relationship with them changed. I no longer wanted to compete and kind of be in that world. I just wanted to be around them. I just wanted to take care of them. And so, and like, I'm sorry, doctor, Tammy, I'm sorry.
Yes.
She was saying how in her practice she makes things external, and that is basically what we do in the arena with the horses. The horses are external to us, and so we can then focus on what they're doing, what their behaviors are representing to the client. So it's very, very metaphor based. And what I've also done over time is, you know, we used to tell people at the end of the session, you know, you have homework, you know, think about the horses, you know, journal, do these kind of things. Well, I've actually shifted from journaling, and I tell my clients, I want you to draw a picture of something that happened in here for you today. And of course, that's met with, I can't draw, I'm not an artist, I get that a lot. But I said, I don't care. I said, just capture it on paper and no words on there. You can use arrows and whatever just to represent it. And when they bring that back, we can sit and we can talk about that drawing, that image for a much longer time than for me saying, how was your week? You know, what did you think about the horses? And then they get a one or two sentence answer. So I've shifted into a little bit of a, and I'm not trained in art therapy. I just knowing from brain research, you know, the left and right hemispheres are very different, and a lot more trauma is processed on the right side of the brain using art and music and somatic things. And so that drawing for the client, it still captures what happened. And we can go deeper with it once they share that.
That is really, really interesting. About half of your clients, I believe, you said in an earlier interview, engage in horse therapy. Talk about what the training you received involved and who is teaching equine therapy. Anyone else in Alaska or in other states that you know of?
Mm-hmm. There's hundreds. The organization that I'm certified through is called EGALA, which is the Equine Assisted Growth and Learning Association. And so that organization basically will train therapists and what's called an equine specialist side by side. So the model is that there's another adult certified person in EGALA with me, and they're typically just a horse person. Some have a dual certification also, but so the equine specialist goes through the exact same training. They're bound by the same ACA code of ethics and all of that. So because they're in the session hearing everything that the client is experiencing. And I think it's a 5-day training for the fundamental training. There are some advanced trainings that are 3 days, and there's a specific one for running a group with equine therapy. So it's probably the most intense training I've ever done. I've dabbled with, you know, brain spotting and play therapy, kind of the weekend wonder classes to get those CEUs. But it was really transformative going through the trainings. And then there's also a lot of research attached to it. So that's it's an international organization. And so they collect data. And so if people want to know kind of the how and the why, like there is a lot of research on there. I can point people in that direction, but they really, most potential clients want the anecdotal stories and how does this work? How did it work for this person? What were some of the reactions with the horses and things like that?
And are the people asking those questions other clients, other patients, or is that some of the training that questions during the training?
It comes up in the training. People mm-hmm. have examples because you have to be recertified every 2 years. And so we'll all be together as a group and share some stories. And there's also the horse component. You know, you were watching horses that if you had your own private horse as a equine therapy horse, there are so many times when the horse will do something unique that you've never seen them do with a client before. And how they react with the client versus how they react with you is very different. Just like a dog, you know, I mean, you could have the friendliest dog in the world, and if they growl at someone, you're probably paying attention. They can pick up on the vibes. They can pick up on the energy of the person and react to it.
Absolutely. And we are anxious to get Katie in this discussion, but we do need to take a quick break. And so we are going to take a break in our discussion today on Line One, Your Health Connection, about therapeutic healing through art and animals. And we'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection. I'm Lori Townsend, guest hosting today on a discussion about therapeutic healing through art and animals. In the studio with me today is Laura Condon. Laura is with Frontier Serenity and does a lot of training with equine therapy work for patients. Dr. Tammy Lubich-White is a drama therapist and incorporates a lot of different types of media type of therapy in her work. And Katie Bell is a licensed professional counselor and registered art therapist in Anchorage and incorporates art into her work with clients, patients. So Katie, I want to get you in here now. Thank you for your patience. I mentioned at the start of the program some art therapy that my son engaged in after the death of his dad. He had turned 7 the day before, so he was just past 6. And everything I read at that time said that for boys especially, their dads aren't even like a real person. They're sort of like this superhero. And I know that it really changed him in a really profound way. I tried to convince the school to hold him back a year because he couldn't focus. And the teachers at that time said, oh, no, the stigma of staying back is... And I said, I think he'd benefit if he could have a little more time. And so he struggled in school. And I think that he has long had sort of a sense of, if, you know, probably not conscious, but in the back of his mind, if only dad was here, this would be better. Or this would have been different. But he did benefit from that therapy. And I remember a couple conversations we had where I realized, whoa, he's got some ideas in his mind that are really, you know, not good about, for instance, he said, I don't want to be a dad when I grow up. We were talking one day about, you know, are you going to have kids when you get older? And he said, oh, I don't want to be a dad. Dads die. And I was so shocked by that and thought, oh, no, what else is in his mind? Because then we could have a conversation about, you know, death doesn't happen just to dads. And look at my dad, your grandfather is alive. And so this was an accident and it can happen at any time in life. But it worried me that there were other things that, you know, he might grow up having these misguided ideas about things. And so I wanted somebody that had training to help him through that. Do you work a lot with children or mainly adults? And is there a typical kind of art therapy or is it really wide ranging?
I work primarily with adults and transitional age youth, so that's like 16 to 24, and then adults. Some people do specialize in working with children. Art therapy is a regulated license. It's a complex process, and so there isn't like one type of art therapy. Again, right, it's a theoretical orientation. It's understanding what's happening neurologically, somatically, psychologically. And maybe a really good way to think about it is art therapy creates what we call like a salient experience. So it because it is allowing our brain, you know, Laura mentioned the right and left hemispheres. So we have, you know, something called like, you know, bilateral stimulation, right, which is when we're essentially engaging multiple neural circuits or neural systems, right? So think about in traditional talk therapy, what we're doing is we're activating, you know, our language centers, our cognitive processing, where we're sort of staying more in like that prefrontal cortex part of our brain. Whereas in all the creative modalities, when we talk about creating the salient experience, it's we're activating our motor cortex, our visual cortex, all of our sensory experiences, as well as cognitions. And what we're doing by getting these neural networks to work together is we can essentially bypass some of these. The brain loves efficiency. So we have behavioral protocols and we have cognitive protocols, right? So these are the stories we tell ourselves about what is real in the world and what isn't real. So your son's experience, he developed a cognitive protocol, right? Which is being a dad is dangerous or it's scary, right? Or it's uncertain, right? And he developed these connections to it. And what can happen through our therapy is being able to allow access to understanding what some of those protocols are, as well as disrupt them, right? So in the art making process, what can happen is that those experiences, we can literally begin to see them. We're creating images around them, or we're working with materials that are invoking a sensory experience. So either emotionally evocative, remember emotions are in the body, feelings are in our feelings are cognitions, emotions are sensations, sensory experiences, right? That might trigger that same experience he had with dad, and that are going to bring forward some of those stories into the conscious realm that he previously couldn't articulate, especially in, you know, in young children before we have, you know, that explicit memory formation and that language recall, right? We have, you know, somatic memory, we have behavioral experiences, and the way that we experience the world is not through language, it's through our body. And so all the creative modalities, you know, require us to go back to that place, which allows information stored, right, in through our various neural circuitry to be able to be accessed, as well as sort of rewiring and reworking the brain, right, to change the story that he's telling himself about maybe what is safe and unsafe in the world, and to be able to process grief, right, and make sense of it. So that is a roundabout way of answering your question, but because I think it's just a lot more complicated, and maybe not complicated, a lot more in depth, right? There's so much more going on in the creative modalities than.
I'm reminded of something Maya Angelou said about people will forget what you did, people will forget what you said, but they will remember how you made them feel.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah,
I think that's a really powerful thing to keep in mind when we're interacting with folks. And also, I'm happy to report that my son is a dad today and is a very, he loves having his kids and he's a real happy dad. So that's great news. And we're going to go to the phones for a moment. John is in Anchorage. Hello.
Hello, this is John.
Yes. Hi. Did you have a question?
Oh, yes, I did. Well, or more like a request. I used to work with a lot of juvenile delinquents, and I also am engaged in sort of training in this type of area as a therapist now. And I think it would be incredibly powerful for this, for all three of your specialties to become available to kids in trouble. I'm not sure how that would work. They don't have any money, but it can really change lives because you can intervene early for the kids who are in jail for a long time. They don't call it jail, are in treatment. I think it would be really nice to have this, them have the opportunities to get this exposure to this type of therapy. And I just wanted your thoughts on that.
Thank you, John. Excellent question. Who wants
I can take a stab at that.
Please,
so,
Laura,
in our world, I only personally bill private insurance, so I'm not Medicaid or Medicare approved. What we've done, the organization that I partner with the horses is it's a nonprofit, and so over the last 10 years, we've written grants, and we've, you know, some are specific, like one was suicide prevention, that was the state grant, like the Mental Health Trust that we've gotten grants from them. And that way, we can provide the service without having to deal with insurance and or Medicare and things like that. So that's kind of one way we've gotten around to be able to work with anybody by having some grant funding.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts, Katie or Dr. Tammy?
I, several years ago, was engaged with a group that did, met McLaughlin and worked with the kids there. And it was a pretty amazing experience for all of us, and I hope that there will be more initiative like that. We all volunteered and worked with the kids, and I think the measurable things, the incidents of violence on the unit were a lot less during that time. We didn't do it for, you know, we did it for several months, but I wish we could have continued doing that, and that initiative like that would come together, and, you know, we will create more of a community of providers, that collaboration is a big thing in that area. So, yeah, John, I hope your request will be answered. I don't know exactly the practicality of it in the next few weeks, but I do believe that you're right.
I appreciate John's call as well, because I think this is such a critical service for young people who are clearly already struggling with some kind of trauma or actions that led them to a place where now they don't have freedom currently. So this would seem like a really good thing for them. Katie?
Yeah, I think the question really speaks to systemic investment, right? When we're looking at asking individual providers to volunteer our time, it's really expensive credentialing to maintain. It's, you know, it takes years and years. So to, you know, for an art therapist, it's a, you know, the minimal entry is a master's degree in art therapy at an accredited institution, followed by 1,000 direct client contact hours that are supervised, 100 hours of direct clinical supervision, you know, taking an exam, getting it in addition to maintaining that. So looking at systemic investment, that's looking at, you know, individuals calling their representatives and looking at funding for mental health services in the public realm, but also investments in education and the arts. So that's that line between therapy, which again is prescriptive and individual, and therapeutic, which is more general, right? And increasing access to that. You know, really the evidence behind creative modalities in terms of what Dr. Tammy was referring to, like the measurable results, and really finding life-sustaining experience is profound. And it's often considered an adjunctive therapy by individuals who are outside of the disciplines, but really they are primary modalities that create rapid and effective change. But we have to invest in that from the bottom up and in throughout our entire community.
Tease that out a little more, Katie, the difference between therapeutic art making and art therapy.
Yeah, so art therapy is within the context of a therapeutic relationship. So in my discipline of art therapy, and then other, there's dance and movement therapy, music therapy, right? Our modalities are aligned with psychotherapy theories. And again, it's based on diagnosis, right? So we're looking at diagnostic implications, the information that we're getting from the observational process of how somebody's interacting with the materials or the modality. And then we're looking at interventions, which is what exactly is being targeted. So some examples are, you know, going back to our caller John's question, when I first started, I worked with individuals coming out of the prison system dealing with substance abuse and pretty severe trauma. Mm-hmm. And because of that background, we are really focusing specifically on breaking dissociative patterns, but also choices, right? So the art therapy is really specific and targeted to how do I help this person experience choice? How do I help them understand their process of choice? And then using the arts to do that. Whereas a therapeutic experience is going to be much more generalized, right? That's somebody who says, oh yeah, I find it really relaxing to knit. Be like, yes, excellent, right? And we have a lot of research on what is happening in the brain. Again, right, think about that salient experience, that integration of different neural circuits and that understanding, right? So think, you know, the short answer is specific versus general.
So therapeutic is more like whenever you enjoy some creative outlet, right. Music, yeah. Art, dance.
Yes, exactly.
All those things. A friend of mine volunteered to teach us a type of art therapy at the women's prison here. And our health reporter did a beautiful story about that work out there. And Jamie, who worked with women in that setting, was very open to doing a wide range of things. Sometimes they would draw, sometimes they'd, she said, I brought Play-Doh and we would play with Play-Doh. And just to help women build relationships between each other and themselves. And she had writing, she would host writing workshops. And part of the story that was reported out was a woman who was in her 60s and had written her first poem, had never trusted herself or thought that she could do anything like that. And it was just a very small thing, but still so profound. And you could see that for her, it was really huge. Like she had realized that I do have something to say. And maybe after a life of being told, you know, you're not smart or you don't have anything to say, here she was finding her own self and gaining some confidence in a really beautiful way.
Yeah, and that creates, you know, tangible, concrete evidence of self that is maybe very contrary to what has been reflected back to us through society or people in our lives that have hurt us.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we are going to take another break. And when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the healing qualities of therapeutic healing through art and animals. As Line 1 continues. In the studio with me today is Laura Condon with Frontier Serenity. She works with equine therapy and horses in a mix of different types of therapy methods. Dr. Tammy Lubitsch-White is also a therapist and incorporates drama and other types of art into her work. And Katie Bell is a professional counselor and registered art therapist in Anchorage. Dr. Tammy, I wanted to get back to you. You said your therapy incorporates so many different things that if your patients were in the same room, they wouldn't think they had the same therapist. What does this mean? How can you tailor your treatments for such a everybody?
I think we can demystify the whole thing. I mean, just as one example, and it's a little bit aside from the question, but I will refer to that. I mean, we have a lot of conversation with our partners, with our family members, with our friends, coworkers. If we look back, what we remember is not so much the conversation, but what we did. I mean, when we sit together and we draw or we do an activity together, it's much more memorable. So just demystify when two people do something together, they wire together, they connect together, specifically when it's guided and when there's problems, we can work on them. So every person is different and every person elicits within us a different reaction. It's normal. I mean, you're not the same person with your child, with your grandkids, with, you know, your coworker. They're here, so they can attest to that. With us, you know, we are different people with different people. And the same goes with therapy. I cannot be like frozen, the same person with everybody. I am very, very different.
Well, I'm sure that is what enables you to make connections that otherwise wouldn't happen. I know that I have in the past, when I've engaged in therapy myself, some people I really connected with well and sometimes not. And so I would realize, well, I guess I've got to move on to try someone else that maybe there's a connection with. But sometimes it just doesn't work.
The magic is always the connection. And it varies and we can't know. But when that connection is made, magic happens. So that's our mission, is to create those connection that makes us alive.
Mm-hmm. You had said also in an earlier interview that you'd like to do improv with therapists. Why? What would that help them with?
That would help them to be a different person with different people and react to the moment and release them from thinking, I need to know what I'm going to do. I can trust myself that what will come out for me will be a response for that moment that would be unique. It's one moment. It never comes back. You never have two moments that are exactly the same. So, and also we are under the tyranny of modalities and needing to fix and needing to be the one that knows, and improv releases us for us. It allows us to be fully alive, fully engaged, fully in the moment.
So it helps people kind of loosen up and realize, I always think in terms of you're practicing medicine, you're not ever perfecting it. You're always practicing and learning as you go, as all of us are.
And also sometimes, you know, the work is not easy and it's very isolated. So when we come together and we play, we have fun, something releases inside us too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that would be a thing I would love to do. I did a workshop with Katie and it was wonderful. I mean, with a group of people, we just, most of us actually clinicians, and we drew and we did collages and we really connected. That was great.
Mm-hmm. You'd also said that we need to have the capacity to play. That sounds simple enough. But do you find that many adults have no idea how to do that? I have asked friends, challenged friends before, when was the last time you rolled down a hill just because it was there? And, you know, connect to your inner kid and do silly kid things once in a while just to do them. Do you find that some adults really can't figure that out?
Bernard Shaw said it in the most eloquent way. He said, we don't stop play because we get old. We get old because we stop playing.
Excellent way of thinking about it. Thank you. Laura, turning back to you, is part of the power of working with horses, do you think, related to their size? Larger animals can be intimidating, but you said people engage that may not engage in much talking, but just be in the pen with a few horses. What's going on during that time?
So we use a herd, and sometimes it's a small herd, maybe three or four horses, and sometimes it's a herd size of eight. And we have, in the facility I work out of, there are miniature horses all the way up to draft horses, and we kind of test the herds out ahead of time because the horses have to be not just horse behaved, but they have to be people behaved. And so we vet them as much as we possibly can. I think the size of the horses, because we're in an arena, the horses don't have halters on, they're loose and they're free to move about each other and us as they please and react to whatever they are going to react to. And a couple times I've had clients who have been completely stoic in my office. We've done talk therapy for a couple of weeks, maybe even a couple of months. And I'm like, hey, let's try it. And they'll go in, and one of the first things we do is we send them out to the herd and just say, just come check in with us when you feel ready. And that some of the clients have just walked out there, and within 2 minutes, they're just bawling. And they'll come over to us and be like, I don't know why I'm crying. I have no idea why I'm crying. And we just say to them, you know, well, your body knows why you're crying. And so then we have something to work with. And everything, like I said before, is metaphor-based. So we use different horse sizes and we have different colors. And it's not always the small horses represent children and the big ones represent adults.
Sure.
We've had, you know, the miniature horses remind people of their grandfather just based off of the way that they interact and have their little horsenality and things like that. We don't tell the clients the names of the horses or the genders. They can usually figure that out. But because we don't want to have like a preconceived sense about that horse, right? So it's very unique in that sense. And I think people will connect with the horses, and, you know, sometimes they'll, the whole session, we call it holding space for them because there's not a lot of talking there. Sometimes we send the client out and it's 5 minutes till the end of session, and then we have to wrap it up, and we invite them to share if they're ready to share. If they're not ready to share, I of course ask them to draw a picture and send them on their way, and then come back for the next session.
I know how much I've always loved horses, and they seem like they really get our emotional state and pick up on it. Like I think that dogs are good at that as well. Do you think that's really accurate, or is it just kind of the majesty and beauty of them that helps us calm down and open up?
I think with horses, their survival and their safety is really within a herd, and that's how they've survived and thrived in the wild. So. And there is some research on like how much our electromagnetic field radiates from humans and how much bigger that space is with a horse. And they basically, I think I gave the example with you earlier, was, you know, when one horse spooks at something, the entire herd spooks, and the other ones don't even know what's going on. And they just reacted to that energy. And what I think is unique about horses too is that once they have a scare and they move away, obviously for safety's sake, but when they sense that there maybe isn't danger, they stop and they turn and they face and they walk back to investigate, that's my word, as to what was that? Is it really dangerous? Was it just a fluke thing? And a lot of people, you know, when we have trauma, we run and we keep running and we don't stop and we never turn and face what it is and try and deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Do you also work with dogs or other animals as part of your therapy?
I do not. I would love to get like an office dog actually certified. I know that it's hard to find anything online anymore. Mm-hmm. If anyone has any suggestions on that, I will say I have brought a dog to an office before. I had a client who was attacked by a dog. And so part of the therapeutic process was to get her to, you know, be comfortable around a dog again. And mm-hmm. so I have a golden doodle, like the most amiable creature on the planet.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that was a work in progress over time. But, you know, that was kind of an unofficial thing. So I would love to learn more about that.
Yeah, as would I, because I think my dog would be a good candidate for that. She seems to really pick up on the emotional state of children, especially. Katie, you do traditional talk therapy also. Do you know fairly quickly when someone would benefit from art therapy when you start meeting with them?
Well, I think anyone would benefit from art therapy. So it's always like whether we're actively engaged in an experiential, you know, process making art, or we're using that perspective. I think it really is for anybody. Oftentimes when there's a lot of what we call like defense mechanisms, a lot of emotional suppression or just difficulty accessing what is going on. And, you know, Laura kind of talked about that experience, right, of like not knowing why someone, but that individual not understanding why they are themselves having a particular experience, that person is a really great candidate for a creative modality that's going to help them access the body experience, the emotional experience. That comes before that cognitive experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We had someone called in, but maybe didn't want to come on air, but called wanting to know what the therapist would recommend for someone who has been consistently abused. What type of therapy would they recommend and what resources are available? I wish that we had more context here to know if this person is still in a risky situation or if this was past abuse, but just some thoughts about who should this person reach out to?
I think, a number of different modalities and providers would be helpful. Again, I'll just reference what you're talking about, Laura. It's like that experience of safety, right? Is that primary, like first kind of stage. How do you develop that groundwork to have a little bit of safety in your life, to have moments of safety? And in that description of, you know, being a part of the herd, being in the herd, experiencing that sense of safety where sometimes the story, right, the cognition is like, oh, horses can be dangerous, right? And so having this alternative experience that is a felt experience, right, in the body. My bias is going to always be towards experiential modalities because that's my training and experience in it.
Talk a little bit about art therapy and making as if art. What does that mean?
So that refers to what Dr. Tammy was talking about, which is like the behavior, right? We can have insight and talk about something to a blue in the face or a caller talking about her abuse. That's great, right? But making art as if is this ability to have a projective emotional experience and a behavioral experience where perhaps she's making art, you know, as if she is safe, making art as if she is whole. What would it look like to be a whole person? What would it look like to feel calm? What would it look like to trust others? What would that feel like, right? What line, shape, color, texture, right? Is there a sensory experience? Is it soft? Is it hard, right? So really being able to have both a metaphorical, right? Metaphor is cognitive, it's storytelling, but also again, that salient sensory experience of what that would be like, so.
I love that idea of envisioning your future self the way that you want to be and kind of taking control of that.
So it's a way to practice. If we don't practice, right, if we talk about our fear but we don't experience and confront our fear, our brain doesn't rewire, right? So Dr. Tammy referred to, you know, being together, wiring together, that collaborative experience. That's really how, you know, we've evolved as a communal species. And so healing takes place in the context of relationship, right? And we have to practice doing, where we're going, right? It's not just talking about it. We have to do it. We have to be it. We have to feel it. And that's what expressive and creative modalities allow us to do.
I was a peer counselor at a safe house many years ago, and part of our training was when women would come into shelter, we would listen as long as they needed to talk and always try to find something to give back at the end when they were done that was positive, even if that was, wow, it's amazing that you're so strong and you're still here and now you're reaching out for help. But also the training was don't suggest anything about what they should do, because when people would say, well, I know I can trust you, you're a good person, you'll tell me what to do that's right. And our response was always, Well, the good news is you get to decide, because now you're in control. No one's controlling you. You are. And so it's up to you. You can trust yourself and make good decisions. And sometimes that, you know, it was a difficult conversation. And certainly I'm no professional person, but just that peer connection too was often really, really powerful for people. Dr. Tammy, do you see changes in how people perceive mental health treatment? Are your patients more open about seeking help and not feeling uncomfortable about maybe telling others they're getting therapy? Or is there still, in, from your perspective, too much stigma attached?
There's still stigma, and we will always, or not, you know, in the near future, we'll deal with that. I think it's less. I think that COVID made a big difference and allowed more people to reach out. The interesting thing that all that we do and the creative modality is the point of view that you're not a broken person with a diagnosis and a problem. You're a creative being that has something significant to say to the world and, you know, to your world. I mean, it's not like the, you know, just the entire world, but you have something significant. And that's a perspective. You are a creative being. What is your creativity? How does it manifest? What you have to see, that's very individual, but that's the difference, is you see people as whole from the very beginning. It's not something that you need to reach, it's something that you already are.
Yes.
So. And people, I think, connect to that really deeply. And as for the stigma, it's there, but it's weaker, and the best people that spread the words are our patients. Mm-hmm. Because they're gonna like, you know, there's when you there's a phenomena when people start therapy, they go to all their friends. You really need therapy. It's like, you know, but
suddenly they're armchair specialists.
So yeah, I think things are changing. There's still work to do.
Laura, tell us. We only have a few minutes left here. Tell us about some of the day-long workshops that you conduct related to grief, suicide prevention, other trauma struggles. Are they sort of a starting point for therapy?
It can be. I think the groups that we've presented and we've hosted, we did a bereavement group. Some of them were my individual clients, and then we advertise out. We get a lot of good feedback for people coming in. We've played around with doing like two hours on a Saturday for a series of 8 weeks. We've shortened that into one day just because it's so hard to pin people down in Alaska. We're busy people. And so we've just done a day workshop. And so then we kind of, you know, we provide lunch and you just need to show up. You just need, don't worry about your grocery list. Just be here, be present. And in our facility, we have a classroom as well. So we'll go out in the arena where there's a lot of emotion and processing. And then I say, okay, let's come up for some air, and we're going to go in the classroom and we'll debrief a little bit, and then we'll go back down to the horses. So we have the facility designed for that, which has been great. And as far as groups versus individual, I think groups are probably one of my favorite, that human connection that happens with a group is really, really cool to see and be a part of. And then some people just aren't comfortable in a group, and so they do find an individual therapy as well. But I do encourage it. Get in a group.
Well, we only have about a minute and a half left here, and I wanted you all to tell us a bit about how you're all human. You're caring a lot when you're working with people that have experienced tremendous tragedies or traumas in their lives. How do you help yourself make sure that your own well is full so that you can help others? Because if you're depleted, you can't be effective at your work. Dr. Tammy?
The code word is self-care, knowing yourself, and doing your own work. Mm-hmm. It's always a joke that every therapist has their own therapist. Highly recommended. I mean, we need to do our work, and that's my recommendation. That's my recommendation for a patient to ask a therapist, do you have a therapist? Do you do your own work? Mm-hmm. Because I think that's a determining factor. We have to constantly do it and metabolize whatever goes through us.
That makes sense, that you can't just be this island rock by yourself and I'm here to help others, but I'm fine. You have to engage as all humans do.
There's a chain, you know, the therapists that have therapists and supervisor, and the supervisor have therapists and theirs have therapists. I mean, this is how it works.
Yes. A couple of sentences.
Yeah, get outside, enjoy the arts, play.
And I had a professor that said, when the client is with you, you hold their their stuff, their trauma, and when they walk out the door, you hand it back to them. Mm. It's not yours to hold.
Very good advice. Thank you so much to our guests today, Laura Condon, Dr. Tammy Lubitsch-White, and Katie Bell. Thanks to our team. Our engineer on the board was Crystal Hyde. Our producer is Emily Messner. And on the phones, Ava White, I think, helped us out today. I'm not sure who was on the phones, but I think it was Ava. Thank you all for listening, and take good care. I'm Lori Townsend. The show will be back next week.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.